Dr. Silverman thought you might help, Connie Kelly said. She said you're the best at what you do. I do many things for Dr. Silverman, I said, although my chosen profession is the least important of them. So I take it you're more than friends? I nodded, adding water to the new coffee maker sitting atop my file cabinet. I'd recently upgraded from Mr. Coffee to one of those machines that used pre-measured plastic cups. I placed my mug under the filter, clamped down the lid, and returned to my desk. Demonic hissing sounds echoed in my office. Where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio? God, Connie said, I feel like the biggest idiot in Boston. I wouldn't worry about that. Why? That's quite an elite club, I said. That line stretches all the way from Mass Ave down to Mattapoisett. I thought I loved him. Did he say he loved you? Of course, she said. That's how I found myself back in therapy. I haven't been to see Dr. Silverman for years. I thought I was cured. Dr. Silverman might say therapy isn't a cure, I said. It's a process. She's a very intelligent woman. I gave Connie a big smile, letting her know I echoed the sentiment. When the hissing and spitting ceased, I retrieved the mug and a carton of milk, a few packs of sugar, and a clean spoon. I set them on the desk near her and returned to my seat. I've worked a lot of unusual jobs, I said, but I have to admit, helping with relationships isn't my specialty. I don't want help, Connie Kelly said. I need to know who he really is. You mean deep down? I know he's a phony, a liar, and a two-timing backstabbing son of a bitch. Yikes. She busily added sugar and milk to her coffee with shaking hands. Despite her mood, Connie Kelly was dressed in a white, sleeveless silk top with a black pencil skirt adorned with chrysanthemums and a pair of black open-toe heels that highlighted her shapely calves. Her toes had been painted a festive red. As true as that might be, I said. Wait, she said. There's more. Being a trained investigator and a master listener, I waited. Pleasant city sounds drifted up from Berkeley Street on a cool, almost fall-like breeze. I leaned back in my chair, resting my hands on my thighs, still dressed in a sweaty gray T-shirt and running shorts. I had intended to check my mail, not meet with a client, but she'd been there waiting before I opened the door. He has $260,000 of my money, she said. He swindled it from me and then disappeared. I withheld from snapping my fingers and saying, now we're talking. Instead, I nodded with grave understanding. The promise of money made me quite attentive, especially after a slow summer and losing my apartment and all my worldly possessions in a recent fire. I don't even know if M. Brooks Wells is his real name. That name sounds familiar, I said. Should I know him? Are you a member of many social clubs? Does the corner bar stool at the Tennessee Tavern count? Hardly, she said. When we were together, he seldom passed on a charity event or dinner invitation. Come to think of it, I never saw him pick up a check. People loved being around a guy who got his face on TV. Actor? Worse, she said. Pundit.